Welcome back to episode 163 of the Press Box Hat Trick. I'm your host, Elias Grigoriadis, and with me is your co-host, Mr. John Ngala. How are you, good sir?
I am great. Feeling really good today.
Finals are done?
Finals are done. I could be a human again.
Regular sleep schedule?
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. With us, we have two very special guests. Firstly, our fearless leader, our editor-in-chief, Miss Ireland Compton. How are you doing?
Hey, y'all. That's as much energy as I can inject into my voice at this hour. I don't know. I work retail and it's the holidays.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's a pretty good indicator of how I'm feeling right now.
And with us, the first time on the show this year, Mr. Louis Pringle.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm back. I'm quite tired too. Just finished my semester. I guess I wasn't as busy as you guys sound. Like, I'm pretty good, but... I'm happy
How
to be back.
How dare you have energy to
say
what's wrong?
Try to keep it alive sometimes.
For our listeners, Louis is actually called Salt Bae too. So that's his nickname.
Really?
We've nicknamed him Salt Bae. I have, actually. I have.
But why?
Yeah.
Explain.
Just because, you know, Pringle, I find that's a really cool last name.
That is cool.
I get it.
Salt Pringle. Bay, so, you know?
First time I got this one, though, so I kind of like it.
So I go for
it's always nice to have unique nicknames that we haven't heard before. That being said, we do have some Stingers news earlier this week. Men's rugby head coach Craig Beamer left the team. He's still with the Stingers. He's going to be part of the he's being an athletic coordinator, but he's no longer the coach. He's no longer going to be the head coach. Spent 4 years... a 3-year undefeated streak in Quebec, 2 fourth place finishes, an 8th place finish, if I'm not mistaken. Ireland, you're the resident rugby queen.
Oh, that's me.
That's you. What are your thoughts on this?
I wasn't expecting this, really. I mean, you look at the run that they've had over the last 3 years or so, and just, like, the success they've had, and they're not done yet. Like, they haven't won nationals.
Yeah.
There's still a little bit of room for improvement, and there's always things that they can do to, like, take it to the next level. So, like, to see him sort of take a step back was a little bit of a shocker to me. And I was, like, sort of thinking the gears were turning in my head. I was like, I don't know if something was going on behind the scenes or, like, something personal, something in terms of the team. But somebody pointed out a really good thing, and I believe it was George Sanchez.
What did Mr. Sanchez say?
Mr. Sanchez said, like, essentially perhaps he was to focus on his role within athletics because he does have another role within the department. And, like, he did say, as he's accomplished everything as a coach. I don't think that's the case. But I do think it's highly possible that he feels that he's done what he could do with this team and that it's time for him to take a step back and focus on his actual job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I haven't had a chance to speak to him about this, but a player from the team, Jerome Levesque, did reply to my tweet and say that's right on. So I'm assuming it's something like that.
Yeah.
Well, what we can say is the person coming in is going to have some big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. They're launching job applications are currently open. If there's anyone out there who feels qualified to apply,
the Stingers. I'm going to coach the rugby team.
So they're having a search for that, and I guess that person will come into. Power is not the right word. It's definitely not what I want to say. But we'll take the helm.
There you go.
Over the next couple months or so, in preparation for the season.
Now you've covered men's rugby for as long as I've known you. What do you think such a drastic change is going to bring to the program? Like, how do you think the team is going to handle it? And especially because they have a lot of older players that are both used to playing together and under Beamer. And do you think Beamer's still going to have a role in the team? Like, do you think he'll still be involved in any way?
I mean, he's definitely... Rugby, if there's one thing about rugby that really stands out to me, is that it's a very tight-knit community.
Yeah.
So you can't really remove yourself from the community as much as you try to remove yourself.
Like, we'll find you.
And that's what I say when I look for him on the field to interview him, and he hides. But, yeah, I think as long as he's at Concordia, he'll still have a hand in the program, be there as an advisor to the players and things like that. And I don't think it's going to be that much of a change if they find the right culture fit. This team is, like, something that I've noticed over the years is they've never really put much of an emphasis on their true performance. It's more about their attitude and how they carry themselves as a team. And I think that's something that they've found a lot of strength in, and it's been very solid over the last couple of years. And with a lot of players remaining with the team and young players who are going to grow with the team, I think it's not going to change much if you bring in a new coach, unless this new coach has some, like, drastic idea that he's going to change the whole program and overturn it. But I think they've recently just had that sort of, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, given the success, too, I don't think that they'd be looking at, a massive shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested to see who they can find, but I don't think it's going to change that much. I think they're still going to continue on with the momentum that they found here with Beamer.
Why? I mean, I know it's tough to speculate, like, aside from just, like, focusing, like, on his other role, because, like, I mean, he's had this role before.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he's leaving, arguably, you know, not arguably, Concordia's most successful team?
Maybe he just feels there's nothing else he can do. Like, I really don't know. I'm sure it was a very hard decision for him to make, and I'm sure it was a very personal decision. So, yeah, I can't really speak to why exactly he would want to leave this team, other than, like, what was said on Twitter by the people who might be a little bit closer than me to the program.
And so,
I think I was the last one to speak to him after the loss in at Nationals, and it sounded like he still had some job left undone. And clearly he had. He didn't win his national championship. That was his goal. Actually, their goal was to medal, which he did, but winning gold is always sweeter. I just feel like he still had something left to do, but in his words, he didn't want to speculate about next year or going back or looking forward to next season. He was more, the loss affected him. And I don't think that's why he quit. Obviously, that would be too much of a shift for a man who's usually so straightforward and knows where he's going. But I think it had been in the works in his mind for a while, I'm sure.
It makes me wonder, like, did he go into the season thinking, okay, if I don't win Nationals, am I going to leave? If I do stay with the team, makes me wonder, was this a last-minute decision? Was it thought out? Was it premeditated? Like, you know, it's a lot of questions going on.
I think we'll get more information as we go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like you said, it's massive shoes to fill.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And
but
know,
it does...
They found Beamer, and something tells me that, you know, Concordia has a reputation that they'll be able to, like, you know, they can attract people of status.
They're still the best.
Right?
They're still the
best team in Quebec by a long shot. And they have a lot of returning players. I think they can now can attract, you know, people of status.
But it does remind me of, you know, you see how Kyrie left after they had just won the finals?
Yeah.
It's like, why are you leaving?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a weird question, but, like, you know, at the same time.
Of course, there's so many other factors.
Roles,
there's
a bunch of factors.
That's
exactly
the first thing that came to my mind.
Moving on to Concordia's, statistically speaking, Concordia's other, you know,
powerhouse.
Excellent. Other powerhouse. Another week. No games this week, but Concordia's women's hockey team is still first in the country.
No surprise there.
They're still, aside from one hiccup, they're still dominating the RSEQ. You've been with the women's team for a while now.
Yeah.
What makes this team so good, Louis?
They got four of the top five scorers in the league, I think.
That's exactly right.
Ridiculous.
And, like, they're the best scoring team. Mm-hmm. They're a lot of the least goals. They're everyone here. So honestly, it's pretty amazing to watch. They're quick. They're always forechecking. Julie Chu has her team. Like, she knows everyone so well. It's a crazy, very nice atmosphere. I've been to some practices already.
Mm-hmm.
Something like, you see practices where the coaches just run as players until they die. That's not what she does. She just wants to connect with the player, make sure they understand what they have to do, their role precisely. She's a great communicator, and obviously hats off to the rest of her staff. This team is it works like a Swiss clock. They're always around the clock. Every time they're out there, they know what they have to do. It's pretty amazing, honestly.
So what are we expecting for the back half of the year?
Pretty much the same stuff. They have elite defensive skill, and obviously Elizabeth Baronet, she's a veteran, she knows what she has to do. And we've got to see Maddie Oakes play for the first time this season. She's also very good. Fortunately, she had a tough game against her, but she still made it out of there with a good performance. It wasn't her fault. The loss wasn't her fault.
I mean, obviously. The other goalie made, what, 45 saves or something like that? So it was, you know, it's just a case you run to a hot goalie and shit happens.
Honestly, it was weird because I was standing up in the stands with my friend. I hadn't seen him in a long while. He was there to watch the Ravens.
Yeah.
He said, all game long, he said, comeback season. Comeback season, or like upset season. all game along, I was like, obviously, they're never going to win. But no, it turns out, he was right. Yeah.
I don't know about comeback season, but maybe upset season for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, man. Was it predictable during that game, though?
It was hard to tell. Honestly, Concordia was working hard. It's one of those, like, that classic expression, like, the puck that wasn't rolling for them that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just, all the bad luck for them. They hit posts, like, 3 or 4 posts in that game.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I can hear the controllers being smashed, like, as we speak, right? Like,
yeah, like, walls, for walls, TVs being smashed. You're right, exactly. No.
But that being said, though, you know, aside from that, they haven't lost. They haven't, you know, they've pretty much dominated every team they've come up against. If you were to pinpoint maybe a potential rival or someone that could surprise them, you know, UDM is still very strong. McGill is still very strong. Who else in the RCQ is to watch out for?
I'd have to go with UDM. They're amazing. They caused a lot of trouble against Concordia this year at various points. But no, aside from UDM, it's hard to see anybody else. If Carleton keeps on the way they're doing right now, I'd say maybe by the end of the season they could be back at some point, and they beat Concordia already. Well, it took 45 saves to beat them, but they still made it.
A win is still a win, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, I only see Montreal. They're very menacing, and they're very imposing physically, so that'd be a big...
And it's also interesting because teams are going against Concordia knowing that this team is the best in the league. So I feel like sometimes you don't even know what opponent you're going to face, just because sometimes they're just going off adrenaline. And it's like, they're the best team. We want to beat this team. But
right now, if you look at the standings, UDM's at 13, McGill's at 11, Ottawa's at 9. So that middle of the pack, Ottawa's at, Carleton's at 6. So, I mean, they still have, a ways to go. Comeback season, right? You never know.
Yay.
Right? The Blues were last place last year at Christmas, so crazier things have happened. But
it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But, like, it looks like the middle of the pack is going to be interesting to watch because...
Concordia's at how many points right now?
Concordia's at 19.
Okay.
So they're sitting pretty.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, that second, third, and fourth are all very tight, and it's interesting to see who's going to end up, you know, playing Concordia come playoff time.
That's going to be an interesting,
right? Because that's pretty much what you're fighting. You're trying to fight at this point, given the form they're in. Who's going to end up? Who's fighting to not end up in fourth?
And because you have to remember, most of the players on this team, the players on this year's team, played on last year's team that lost in the first round against the Marlies. And Concordia came to this one as the heavy favorites, and they're supposed to win.
Yeah, you see,
and they got upset.
Right?
Yeah.
So they know what's coming up ahead.
Yeah, they've got a massive chip on their shoulder.
Of course they do. Honestly, it was hard to. Like, usually after games, we get to chat with Julie Chu. She's very nice with that. We get to chat with at least one or two players. After that game, I can definitely tell you no one went to chat at all.
Steaming.
Oh,
yeah.
She wasn't too bad. Honestly, she's a great character, and she's always very proficient with us. But the girls, like, we tried to talk to one or two of them, and no, it was not.
So
understandable.
For our listeners who don't know, how do playoffs work?
It's a strange format over there.
Yeah.
So the first 4 teams obviously go to playoffs.
Yeah.
And one plays 4, 2 plays 3.
Okay.
It's a 3 games format, so
best of 3.
Yeah, best of 3.
Yeah, best of 3.
Best of 3, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what it is. That's it. Yeah, for sure. So you play 2 games at home, 2 games on the road.
Yeah.
And final game home. Whoever takes it plays final. Final is another I think it's a best of 5 in the final, or another best of 3. I got to check that. Sorry. But obviously winner goes to national, and hopefully Concordia gets to go back to national after a year off. So all the best for them.
Now, there were a lot of rookies in that first team that won the nationals. And
that's
right. A lot of them are, you know, are rookies in second years. And now a lot of them are, you know, arguably in the prime of their esports career. Do you think that there's, you know, this thought that, like, what if we don't get back? The sense of, like, you know, we're upset once. Do you see any lack of confidence in this team is what I'm trying to get at? Because this team looks like they're walking into a rink, they're getting 40 shots on net, and they're forechecking you into oblivion, and then they're going home.
There's, honestly, that's one of the things I was worried about, because Juju is still playing a lot of young players on our team right now, and those players are filling in perfectly. Emifecto, Lenny Fidbaya, they're filling right in, they're taking over on the ice. Emifecto scored a game winner in an overtime against UDM, the big game that's...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to see if any weaknesses in that team, because they're pretty much all over you, like you said, and they just know what to do. Whenever the puck not bouncing for them, they'll work harder and they'll try to find a way to beat you. But I don't know. It's really hard to find any flaw in that team.
Yeah, they look like they're, you know, I mean, essentially unstoppable, especially with the attitude they've got, too. It looks like it. It's looking promising.
Honestly, yeah. It's
nice
fun.
It's nice to have, you know, multiple teams at Concordia succeeding. You know?
It's great.
Yeah.
Insider analysis by Mr. Pringle.
I try, man. I try.
Moving on, still staying in the realm of hockey, but Montreal's horrifying, you know, citywide depression thing that ended up ruining the entire city's mood, their losing streak is done. Yeah,
yes,
that was a really weird time where everything just seemed off. Beat Ottawa, they beat New York, they've strung a couple games together. There's injuries, scares everywhere, but you know,
they're probably not here.
I feel like,
to be fair,
this led Julien off the hook. He's on a string right now.
The ice is thickening for sure, but I don't think they're out of it yet. I mean, they're still in a playoff position. They're third in the division, so
yeah.
Like, they're still. I mean, it's a little early to start ringing the bells, and I think, you know, Montrealers tend to react very violently, whether it's good or bad. So, like, if it's good, we're winning the cup. If it's bad, we're tanking and we're going to fire everybody. And that's pretty much, you know, even on if you listen to the podcast last week, that's pretty much the mood everyone was in. We're just like, burn everything to the ground and start over with Lafreniere. But, you know, all of a sudden everyone's moods change. And that's
I mean,
like,
that's still on the table.
Yeah, that's the worst part, right? But, like, at the same time, we're in a playoff spot.
For now.
That's true. But, like, it's weird to watch sometimes because now everyone's, like, super optimistic. We're playing Detroit tomorrow. And
who's playing Detroit tomorrow? Who?
They're playing Detroit tomorrow? And
she's going to get you every time on
that. I'm used to it at this point. Sometimes I do it out of spite. But things are starting to look up, and I think, like you said, like I said earlier, like Julien is sort of let off the hook, and depending on how they keep on playing, like it'll be interesting to see. But you know, there's still injuries.
Yeah.
There's still, you know, the issue with the Rockets that you guys are going to watch.
Yeah,
that are also, you know, in massive injury trouble. They just acquired a new player, if I'm mistaken, right?
Yeah, it's Nico
from Anaheim, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see
the return.
The return, exactly. It's
I
not
mean,
really
like, he's not reporting to Montreal, though. He's reporting
to Laval.
Right. So,
well, I mean, I think given the injury state, the state of Laval's roster, I think they sort of just put him there for the time being.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, like, pretty much everyone on that team is hurt in some way.
We've got Charlie Hudon on crutches, but still playing. Because
well, it's better than playing like with four forwards and then just hoping for the best, right? Like it's not beer league, so they do need to.
And you got your quarter of your team upstairs, and you got your Keith Kincaid in that.
Yeah,
very great times for the Rocket right now.
Oh, I still feel
we might be going to a blow.
Hey, like I like
who,
goals.
Who are they playing?
They're playing Rochester.
How are they doing this year? Do you know?
Oh,
no,
I have no idea.
Just going for fun.
That's fair. So that'll be interesting to see, but I think Montreal as a whole is sort of like kind of breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah, they haven't turned a corner.
Exactly.
But on that awful sequence
they've
lost the cops that have been trailing them.
What?
But it's not all the
burglary metaphor?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a GTA stars.
It's
so
the
they're back at three
stars
now.
Okay, that's
they're chill.
Well, I just feel like anybody can beat
them.
I know, right?
Well, yeah.
You know?
I mean, Montreal's one of those teams where, like, at their best, they could beat Washington, but at their worst, we'll lose 8-1. They'll lose 8-1 to Boston, right? So, Montreal's one of those moody teams, and they've been like that for as long as I can remember, as long as I've been, you know, following.
You know,
Montreal's
that's one thing I've noticed.
You know?
Like, we're all in our 20s, and we've never got to see a great Montreal Canadiens team. We've only got to see like the greatest player they've had was either Zach Kukoyev or Alex Kovalev.
Yeah,
and
that's the thing that my parents always like upset, or like people my parents' age are always like upset that the Canadiens are doing poorly. And it's like, well, yeah, because you like grew up when they were like winning a cup every other year. And it's like, yeah, where's the Stanley Cup parade? Oh, it's the same, you know, it's the same path as usual.
Yeah,
like, the furthest we've seen was a conference final.
Yeah, it's a conference final. Yeah,
yeah,
right. And that was 1 year, and then it was back to like.
Oh yeah, we got two, but like one was without Price and Dustin Tokarski was too small to attend. So that's another thing, though.
Exactly, though, but it's sort of like You know, why are we aren't getting as mad at the Canadians are bad because of the fact that, like,
we haven't
remember
really
them being
seen
good.
Them good enough
we don't remember
think.
Them being good. We remember them being, like, okay, maybe, like, above average here and there. But it's always been like, yeah, they're all right. They're good.
I feel like boomers will call this entitled just because
yeah,
you said that.
I mean, here's the thing, though. They're the entitled ones now because they're
yeah,
the ones like,
sure.
Where's my Stanley
Wait,
Cup?
Exactly,
no.
Right?
You don't get a Stanley Cup
they
anymore.
They were spoiled too much. No,
so,
no they're
that's
just
exactly
like,
they
yeah.
were spoiled and they're entitled now. That's a good
thing.
they're,
they
they're,
call
they
this
feel
entitled,
enti-
but
they feel
are.
Entitled to a Stanley Cup? Well, no, because our team is not good. So you don't deserve a Stanley Cup.
I like the Kovalev era, but something tells me I really just think he didn't. He could have put more effort into.
One of the things with Alexei Kovalev was the fact that he was sort of just like, yeah, I'll score on the power play like once every two games, and then I'll do whatever. You know? But that's sort of, that was sort of his trademark too, right?
That's
it was sort of just like he'd show up, he'd be very lackadaisical, and he'd very be like, all right. And still, like, one of the most blasphemous things I've ever seen was giving Kovalev the captaincy.
Oh, no, man. I love this.
I hated that
images.
With a passion.
Oh. Oh.
The Montreal Canadiens captaincy is, like, this sacred thing.
There's
and
this thing
Saku
with...
Koivu was, like, the beating heart of this team.
There's this
and
thing
he went
with... oh.
And just, like, you know what?
Let's
you're hurt
let's,
for a bit, so...
Let's give it to him.
You're right, though, but, like, I feel
that
like...
That is just straight-up blasphemy. And then you create this... Because you create this narrative that, like, the Canadiens are better with Kovalev as captain, which is, first of all, not true.
It's but they won more than
it doesn't matter. They were not as good. It was, like, a
I
shell of a team.
But I feel like Montreal Canadiens, it was, like, when Saku was not playing, it's like Pittsburgh when Crosby's not playing.
Yeah.
Malkin goes to the next level, and it was the same thing with Kovalev. He just went to the next level. And
yeah, like,
crazy.
Kovalev always played better. Kovalev
when
himself
he was
always played
yeah.
better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When
yeah.
he
had
Malkin,
I mean,
statistically, is better when Crosby's not
playing.
Playing because, you know, he's the guy. But, like...
Three-year Russian league. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. But, like, at the same time, it was a shell of a team, right? Like, Saku Koivu was very
exactly.
much the heart of that team. And he was very much, you know, like, the heart of Montreal sports for
of
a
course.
Long time. Like, it was him and, like... It was him and Anthony Calvillo that were, like, basically the babies of Montreal sports. And they had, like, everyone's adoration, including mine.
Oh, my
so,
youth,
like,
yeah.
Exactly. So, watching that was sort of, like... I saw someone that wasn't Saku Koivu...
Where the sea?
Where the sea? And I was like, wait
same,
a minute.
Same thing with Brian Gionta worked first.
Yeah,
yeah.
It, there's no adjustment period,
yeah.
right? And like even that, Gionta started to grow on us, and then
well,
now it's Pacioretty. And Pacioretty never stuck with me as a kid. Like I'll never understand that decision.
Did you
the
make
same
a short
time.
Joke? That's rude.
What was the short
I
joke?
Didn't hear, I didn't hear
he
it.
Said,
what?
He grew on us. I said, well, he didn't grow on us.
That is a very kind man.
He is. He's
he
actually
is.
A wonderful
yes,
human being.
That's,
that's the worst part. Gianta's a wonderful human being. But, like, on the Pacioretty side of things, I never understood why he got the captaincy. And I never saw him as a captain, especially, like, the status of a Montreal Canadiens captain.
Have you ever listened to Max Pacioretty speak? He's the most boring person on this
what
planet.
What are you talking about? This is Max Pacioretty, and he's just, like, he's not even Carey Price. Where he's
How
like
can you rally a team like
you
that?
You can't rally a team. He's just,
like he, I don't even
the
think
most
he ever
deadpan
wanted
delivery.
He never
he's
wanted
like Stephen
to.
Wright, but
convinced.
Not funny. It's just, yeah.
Convinced he just never wanted to.
Oh, he never wanted the captain. I
it was the vote, right? I think the vote put him up to it. He was like, oh,
I'm really? Okay, fine. I guess that's what you guys want. Like, he seemed very thrust into that role, and he seemed very much not willing to do it. So
and the results kind of showed. Well, no, he was scoring, though.
We got Tatar for it, so you know.
Yeah,
they got Tatar for it, so you know what?
Yep.
Thomas.
To tap. So there are worse things to happen than that trade. So now we have Shea Weber, who's doing really well and who's the third best offensive
defenseman
in the league.
Yeah, surprising for him.
It's Carlson, Dougie Hamilton, and Shea Weber. Surprisingly enough,
his reaction to that goal and that wraparound goal the other night was
that was incredible.
Like,
the man's like 6'4", he's 250 pounds, and he's moving like that. That's ridiculous. This man moved like he was. You know,
he's adapting
shorter,
surprising. Yeah.
6 inches shorter, maybe 50 pounds lighter. And he was just flying. It was like a wraparound. You can't just like do a wraparound lazily. It's got to be quick. And he was like on it. And you're like, okay.
Okay.
That's my captain. All right.
Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, did you see Nick David the other night on the penalty shot?
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
I have McDavid in fantasy too. So I was like, I'm that guy. Of course.
Meanwhile, entire roster is on injured reserve right now.
I have one. I only have one. That being said,
I think I have four.
I have Patrice Bergeron that wasn't on an IR slot. I wasn't on the injured reserve, so I couldn't put him on my IR slot. And he was just out for 2 weeks. They just had him as out. And like, put him on the list, please, so I can put another upset player. What
is people who keep flipping from out to day-to-day?
Yes.
Make up your mind.
That was 2 weeks of Patrice Bergeron. It was day-to-day for like a day, like a couple hours, then be out for 2 days. And then like, maybe he'll play. No.
I had the same thing with Mahali Fleury, and I was really pissed, and then I realized because his dad was dead, so I was like,
I had the same thing with Markstrom. I got like, not available. And I'm like, what does that mean? I was like, oh
yeah, that's right.
Never mind, take it back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Ireland, you can't really complain. You're in first place, so.
Yeah, but I'm going to be in first place when Sam, of all people, beats me.
That's like 4 weeks straight. Is that two or 3 weeks straight that you're in first place?
I've been first place for, like, almost the entire time.
It's a mess, though. Like, first place is, like, 6-4, and then, like, seventh place is, like, 3-7.
I'm only in first place by, like,
points. 26 you're on points. Yeah. Ooh. And if I beat Dean, I'm going to pass you both, so... That being said, I'm going to win the Fantasy Football League.
Oh, that's kind of true, though.
I'm going to win the Fantasy Football League, and it's not even close, and I'm chilling. But Mike Evans is hurt, so that sucks.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I mean, I still have
Mike. Did you beat me this weekend?
This weekend's not done.
No, like, last week, I mean.
I had a bye last week.
Okay, true, you're in first.
No, I was in first.
I lost by a point, like a single
point.
Oh,
you lost to Dustin, didn't you?
To Ali, yeah, no. That's so mad.
No, but, I mean, that being said, I still have Chris Sutton. I still have DJ Moore, and I still have Michael Thomas.
That's right. No.
So, I mean, I still have, like, I'm still ready.
How about that Lamar Jackson, guys?
Well, I have Marquise Brown, so he had two touchdowns yesterday.
That's right.
I'm not complaining. And plus, you have Lamar Jackson.
I do. But
here's the thing. Here's a fun fact. If John actually played fantasy, he would have beat everybody, including myself.
I get reminded of that single fact every morning in radio on Monday morning with Max. He's so pissed. He showed up and Max, like,
Every single time, I look at the standings, and it's just like, everyone's got like, everyone near the bottom got like 1,400 points, and John has like 1,800 points. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Moral of the story is, fantasy is stupid. I'm addicted to it, and I can't stop. And I have 4 different leagues in 3 different sports.
I don't know how you do it. I have 2 and I'm dying.
Do you do soccer?
I do soccer.
How's it work?
So basically the way soccer works, it's not a draft because there's just not enough players.
Of course.
But what you do is you get a budget of $100 million. Mm-hmm. Virtual currency. And then you have to get like 2 goalies, 5 defensemen, 5 midfielders, and 3 attackers. And then you make your...
Is there like points
your
for
whole squad.
And stuff
like that? So basically your points are clean sheets... Clean sheets, goals, assists, and then you lose points for like cards and stuff. And if you're a defenseman or a goal, you lose points for like how many goals you concede.
Okay,
but it's very straightforward.
Can you trade? Like, let's say I want
you're allowed 1 free trade a week. Because the thing is, if you use more than that, then you lose points. Because like it's not like a weekly battle thing. It's sort of just like
season
who has the most at the end of the season. So if you trade away players more than you're allotted, you lose points based on like. How many players you trade away? So if I trade away 3 players in a week, like I did this week, because I got sick and tired of my team, I ended up losing 8 points because they were so bad. I'm sorry, I was in first place by like 80 points, now I'm in second place, and the guy like anyway. But you lose like 4 points per player that's not free.
Okay.
So I lost 8 points and I got a free transfer. So like I'm willing to take that to like improve my team, but at the same time I was just annoyed because my like I had like one of the best players in the league who was on the worst one of the worst teams in the league. So then they're just terrible. Just like, I hate you, but I love you. Fantasy is
of course
a weird thing.
On that note,
that'll wrap it up for episode 163
of
the Press Box Hat Trick.
We're at 163.
You can find me on Twitter at Eli Grigoriadis.
You can find me on Twitter at Lumjo.
You can find me on Twitter at Ireland Compton.
And you can find me on Twitter at Louis Pringle 96.
96?
I know, right? I'm really old.
Thank you very much for watching, everybody. Thank you for watching the podcast.
Thank you for listening.
We will see you next week. Take care.
A hot mess.